You're listening to The Real Short Box, a comic book podcast made for geeks by geeks.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for coming listening to The Real Short Box. My name is Donald, and my special guest tonight would be, or today, depending on when you're listening to this, would be a very talented gentleman. He is a actor and director. His name is Pete Mendoza. Pete, say hello.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
And thanks for coming on, Pete. We really appreciate it here. All the guys have been so super busy. I am either extremely dedicated or I have no life. So it's one or the other. And I appreciate you coming on and filling in as a guest. That's very kind of you. Now, you have a project coming out here, or will have come out, at least an episode or two would have come out by the time this airs, but you have a project that has is coming out online, if I recall, correct?
Yeah, it's going to be showing up on YouTube and Facebook on The Bomb TV Live.
Okay, and what's the name of it?
The name of the show is called Lies Behind Their Eyes.
Okay, and can you tell the listening audience a little bit about it real quick?
It's a bit of a drama suspense thriller with a supernatural twist to it.
Okay. And,
it involves people that are involved with money and drugs and that sort of lifestyle.
Oh, so... it's a family film.
Yes, very family. Actually, no, rated pretty much rated R.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it sounds good. And that's going to be available on the website and on YouTube as well.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to be airing it, tomorrow on Halloween night at 8:30 Central Standard Time.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay. And to get us started here, we're going to be talking about holiday films. And not all holiday films. We're going to be talking about, like, Thanksgiving, Christmas films in general, starting out. Because this is going to be airing around the holidays, so I wanted to make sure that we had some fun content for everybody. And the reason why we're recording some of these in advance is so people will have this available that they can check out some of these films around the time of the holiday so they can enjoy them instead of listening to it on the day and being going like, well, that would have been good information like a month ago. Thank you. So we're trying to get ahead of the curve on this stuff. So we appreciate you all listening and tuning into us tonight. Pete, why don't we go ahead and start with a few selections that you have and we can discuss.
Well, when it was coming to like the Thanksgiving aspect of movies, I don't remember seeing that many as a kid, because the ones that did were revolved around Thanksgiving were mostly like adults, kind of like what I saw as boring films. But then after taking a few looks online, I noticed that Rocky is actually considered a Thanksgiving film because there's a scene where they're having Thanksgiving dinner early on in the film.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Nice, nice. I did not actually realize that.
Yeah. Took me by surprise as well. And then there was also Adam's Family Values.
Yes. I've seen that recently. I haven't seen Rock in a long time. But I've seen Adam's Family Values recently. And if I recall, there was a Thanksgiving play that Wednesday just did not want to be a part of until she could make it how she wanted to make it.
Yeah.
And it ended up turning into quite the demented theatrical production, if I recall.
Very much an actual truth-telling to all the sugarcoating behind Thanksgiving.
Yeah, there we go. That's a perfect way of saying it. So yeah, that was a great one. That one... I hadn't seen the first Addams Family in forever, and I just watched that about 2 weeks ago. Mm. Very much enjoyed it. Forgot how much I enjoyed it, and then I thought, well, maybe I should watch Addams Family Values again for this Thanksgiving, since it's been, I'd say, like a year or two since I've seen it last, probably a couple years. So I remember most of it, but not all of it. I remember Joan Cusack was in the second one, and she was phenomenal in that role.
She was. She really was. Very good chemistry between her and Christopher Lloyd.
And Christopher Lloyd played Uncle Fester, if I recall, correct?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, that was great. And, you know, all the other players were back, all the, you know, the main cast and stuff.
The brilliant Raul Julia.
Yes, Raul Julia, which I'll say it every time I hear his name. If only his last film wasn't that film.
Yeah. But
and by that film, I mean Street Fighter.
But he killed that part. As horrible as that film was all around, he killed that part of Bison.
He was like one of those things where I didn't think it would work, but it worked. Like with Ian McKellen playing Magneto, I thought, well, he's too small. He's not going to work. He's too old.
Yeah.
And the gravitas that he brought to it was like no other. It was amazing. And I was like, at the end, I was like, yeah, that's Magneto, you know?
Yeah, it's always so elegant to see actors of their tier performing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was great. So other Thanksgiving films. Now, I have a few here that I've been thinking about. One of them great, one of them not so great. So we'll go with the not so great first. This one had a screenplay by John Hughes. Ooh. And was directed by Peter Famin. And it starred Ed O'Neill and Ethan Embry. Mm-hmm. Can you guess the name of the show or the movie?
And the name of the movie? Oh, I'd seen a clip through of it while I was trying to see like best Thanksgiving films.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, it's called Dutch.
Dutch. There we go.
Plot behind it is Dutch is dating the divorced Natalie, which is Jo Beth Williams playing that role. And he offers to drive her stuffy 13-year-old Doyle, which is Ethan, from his private school in Atlanta to his mother's home in Chicago for Thanksgiving. Doyle is not interested as he blames Natalie for the divorce and wants nothing to do with his mom's new boyfriend, especially given the man's lowly working class roots. The pairing makes for a journey filled with bickering, mishaps, and eventually bonding. Or, I thought it said bondage at first, but I was like, thank God I read that wrong. It came out in 91, and in July, which was a bit of an odd time to release a Thanksgiving-like movie. But, you know, I'm not one to judge. It didn't, if I recall, it didn't do very well in theaters. And it ended up being not an amazing film. It was okay. I remember watching it when I was a kid, and I was like, this is okay. And then I went back and watched it again, and I was like, yeah, this is okay.
I was and, probably around 3 or 4 when that came out then.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Wow. I'm old. I'm so old, Pete. I'm so old. Another one, if I recall, wasn't Son-in-Law a Thanksgiving film as well?
With Pauly Shore?
Yeah.
I think so. I remember I was on a Pauly Shore binge for a while when I was a kid after watching Biodome.
Yeah. Yeah. And Biodome was like, for me, the worst of the worst.
Really? But,
yeah. Oh, yeah. I was a much bigger fan of like Encino Man and In the Army Now. And then this one, Son-in-Law, which I thought was great. It had the amazingly talented Lane Smith in there as the father of Carla Gugino. I can never pronounce her last name.
Carla Gugino.
There we go. And she had a brother played by Patrick Renna. And then, of course, Pauly Shore was the sort of love interest in this film. And it took place over the holidays. To explain it really quick, Carla played a girl named Rebecca. She's from the country, and she spent most of her life on the farm in South Dakota. She went away to college in L.A. She fell out of place. She gets befriended by a party animal, Pauly Shore, who plays the character Crawl, who convinces the ambivalent Rebecca to stay in the city. When Thanksgiving break rolls around, Rebecca, no longer an innocent farm girl, invites Crawl back to South Dakota, where he pretends to be her fiancé. So hijinks ensue as the family loses their mind over the aspects of having him as a son-in-law. And it's actually quite hilarious. So I do recommend that one. And yeah, surprisingly, it is a Thanksgiving film.
Nice.
So, yeah. And my last recommendation for Thanksgiving would be Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Oh, classic.
Yeah. And this is Neil Page, played by Steve Martin. He's a bit of a control freak. He's trying to get home to Chicago to spend Thanksgiving with his wife. His flight is rerouted to Kansas. He's, I believe, in New York at the time. And because of a freak snowstorm, he gets stuck with a talkative Del Griffith, played by John Candy, who is amazing. They're both amazing in these roles. It's like the Odd Couple Roadshow.
Two brilliant, brilliant gentlemen.
Yeah, and they must overcome being delayed by planes, trains, and automobiles on their way home to be with their families, respectively. And there's a bit of a twist at the end. It's amazing. It's heartfelt. It's freaking hilarious. And until last year, I did not know that there was a scene at the end after the credits.
Oh, wow. Nice. Yeah,
I had no idea. So that was a new little treat for me and a treat for all the audience out there that might not have stayed for that either, like I did.
And rest in peace to the great John Candy.
Yes, John Candy and John Hughes, who also directed that one and wrote that one.
Love John Hughes movies.
Layla Robbins was also in it, played Steve Martin's wife, and Kevin Bacon had a brief role in it, racing Steve Martin to get a taxi in New York.
Oh,
Kevin won.
Nice.
Yeah, so it was pretty cool. Do you have any more recommendations as far as Thanksgiving, or should we move on?
I really liked a lot of the animated TV specials that they used to put out. There was this one I could never find it, but it involved like a yeast flour monster that took over the kitchen while all the other like food stuff and utensils were coming to life before Thanksgiving dinner.
Utensils coming to life before Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah, I think it was like a Nickelodeon special cartoon.
Oh, wow. Now, see, when I was a kid, Nickelodeon, it existed, but we didn't have cable. We couldn't actually get cable. This is how country I am. We couldn't get cable where I lived. So if it wasn't able to be picked up by an antenna, mm-hmm. we could not get it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it sucked. I'd have to ride my bike to my friend's place to go watch stuff because he had cable. And the funny part is he lived not far from me. He lived like probably about a half a mile to a mile. But where he was at, they had extended the cables so he could get cable. But they wouldn't extend it any farther than that.
Oh.
Yeah. They were like, well, we will charge you to extend it and it will be costly. And my dad was like, no, thank you. We'll do without. So that's why I know so many movies, though, because we rented movies all the freaking time.
It was the best going to the video store.
Yes. Yeah. And my parents were like professionals at it. We would go in and they'd be like, OK, we're looking for this movie. And I would go in with them and we would like laser in on where it would be.
Mm-hmm.
And then you always look at the boxes next to that movie if it was out, because sometimes people would slide that movie behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So they could come back later and get it or something. Thought they'd be sneaky.
Yeah.
And I was like a laser for that shit. I'd find that stuff like that.
I would always book it to the horror section.
That was one thing my mom didn't really particularly like. So we didn't, honestly, a lot of the classic horrors mm-hmm. I either still haven't seen or were introduced to really later in life. Like I was 35 when I watched Jaws for the first time.
Oh, wow. No, yeah. when I was a kid, we had Cinemax, and I'd be in my room, and my dad would come in, and he's just like, "Hey, check out this movie," and he put on the Toxic Avenger, or what was that one first film by Peter Jackson?
Dead Alive.
Yeah.
Oof. I just watched that. I think it was earlier this year. I watched it with Maria and. I almost lost my lunch.
Yeah, it's pretty gross. It's pretty gross.
Super gross. Like, and I don't like slasher films at all. And this wasn't a slasher film. Maria was right there. It's not a slasher film. But she led me to believe that it's so over the top that you'll laugh instead of think it's gross. But I feel like her humor and my humor register differently because I don't see that kind of stuff still as not gross. I find it like disgusting. And like I think we just got done eating or something, and I watched it, and I was like, we need to pause this, because I was like, I'm gonna vomit if we keep going. I know, I'm a wuss, but I got through it to my credit. I did get through it. I don't want to watch it ever again, but I did get through it.
It seemed like there was an Evil Dead like homage when he got the lawnmower up and started mowing down all those deadheads.
Absolutely. I thought the exact same thing. So I was like, yeah, this makes sense. Like, there's some influence there. Peter Jackson got some influence from Sam Raimi.
Yeah.
It has to be the way it is.
Yeah.
Which is cool. That's really cool. Let's see. Do you have anything else Thanksgiving-wise, or should we move along to Christmas time?
I think we can roll on to Christmas.
All right. What do you got for Christmas?
For Christmas, to start off, it's like a classic, and it's like it's always on everybody's list. It's The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Ah, okay. That's a good one for Halloween and Christmas. It kind of comes back. So I like to, like, I think the best idea for people that are trying to decorate for the holidays, they should decorate outside and inside all Nightmare Before Christmas themed, so they don't have to take anything down for 3 months straight.
That's brilliant. Yeah, that is a thing to do.
Yeah. Like, I have a large, like, statue of Oogie Boogie right next to it. And Oogie Boogie is not going anywhere. You know, he's going to stay from Halloween straight through to Christmas, and that's fine.
Nice. We have a black Christmas tree, and I turned a regular wreath into that wreath monster.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Nice. I got a black wreath on my door with an owl, which I figure works through Thanksgiving because it's an orange owl.
Mm.
So I was like, black and orange, that can be Thanksgiving. So I'm gonna run it through to that, and then I'll probably go with my traditional green wreath after that. But we'll see. We'll see. Maybe I'll get a little crazy with it.
Nice.
Yeah, so Nightmare Before Christmas, that was directed, not a lot of people realize this, but it wasn't directed by Tim Burton. It was directed by Henry Selick.
Henry Selick, yep, that's correct. Same guy, Coraline.
Yep, you got it. Same guy that did Coraline. Cast had Tim Burton, he was in it, Catherine O'Hara, Danny Elfman was in it, which was really cool, Ken Page, William Hickey, so a really good, solid cast of characters that played these roles. For those that don't know, that have been isolated in some type of a bomb shelter for the past 20, 30 years, this film follows, it's about the misadventures of Jack Skellington. Halloween Town is a town where he's the beloved Pumpkin King, and it's, of course, a fictional town because this is all stop-motion animation. He's actually become bored with the same annual routine of frightening people in the real world when he accidentally stumbles upon a Christmas town. All bright colors and warm spirits and stuff, and he goes inside there, and there's snow, and that's where we get the famous song, What's This? He gets a new lease on life. He plots to bring Christmas under his control, kidnap Santa Claus, and take over the role. But Jack soon discovers that even the best laid plans can go seriously wrong. And he has a change of heart, so to speak, and has to fix some things. It turns out to be a very heartfelt, very fun, entertaining film. But what I want to know, Pete, is, when he was at these trees, there was like five or six trees all in a, like a circle, and one of them had a tree on it, and that's how he made it into Christmas Town.
Yeah.
I think there was another one that had an egg on it, and then there was a couple more with other patterns, if I recall.
There was shamrock. There was a turkey, the Easter egg. We saw the Easter bunny later on in that film.
Right. So my question is, why didn't they ever have him go back into any of these other towns?
I think they might have done something to that effect in a video game sequel to Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, okay. That I did not know.
Yeah. Not everybody liked it, but it's apparently canon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow, I'll have to check that out. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to YouTube that and see if there's like a cinematics or something that you can just watch.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
I was boning up at one point in time earlier this year for a walkthroughs on some videos because I was doing a survey thing for video games. And I haven't played that many video games in a bit. So I was like trying to bone up and I was like, I could either try to play all these games or I could watch some walkthrough tutorials. And I was like, oh, I'm going to watch some walkthroughs. So I watched some walkthroughs. And one of them was Red Dead Redemption 2. Ooh. And I was like, yeah, this is actually a movie. This is a really cool movie. And I was like, damn, I want to see this as a movie on the big screen. So like sometimes the video games end up being better than a lot of the movies that you'll see in theaters.
It's like when people try to do a movie based on a video game, it's very hard to succeed. Like,
yes.
Personally, I think one of the best video game-based movies to come out recently would be the Pokemon film with Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
But before that, I enjoyed the Mortal Kombat film, the first film, not the second film.
Mm-hmm.
And Silent Hill, the first Silent Hill. But everybody had their gripes with them. I thought that they were pretty... They paid really good respect to the source material. And it's just about getting it into your head that there's the multiverse theory, that there's the video game universe, and then there's the cinematic universe. The cinematic universe has to drift away from the source material sometimes just to be its own thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Sometimes it does. But like with a movie like Prince of Persia, they just didn't understand it.
Yeah.
Like, it was poor casting, the story was weak. And I still don't think they've gotten the Tomb Raiders right. I feel like they could be so much more. They could be, we would get a more female version of Indiana Jones is what I would want from a Tomb Raider film with Lara Croft. But we're not getting that. We're getting... A glossy, very high gloss version of Alan Quartermain instead. You know, it's just not. And don't get me wrong, I love Alan Quartermain. I actually thought this last one that they did, Tomb Raider, was pretty good.
A lot of good things about it.
Yeah, but definitely could have been better, if that, you know, makes sense. It always can be better, but this one was. It had its moments, but it wasn't perfect. But maybe they'll get there. They'll do another one or something at some point, and maybe they'll finally hit their stride with it. Sometimes it takes a while.
I think they're going to be concentrating their money on Tom Holland's Nathan Drake series of Uncharted.
Yeah, and you know we all wanted Nathan Fillion for that role. But, you know, Tom Holland, I guess, is younger and more potential for a longer life in these films. Do you know what studio is producing it?
Not off the top of my head.
Hmm. Okay. If I was a betting man, I would guess Paramount, but I'm usually wrong, so don't ever bet with me.
Okay.
Unless it's on the ponies. I'm really good with that for some reason. Everything else I suck, but I'm really good with betting on the ponies. So another one that I know that you had brought up before and I think is excellent, and since we just talked about The Nightmare Before Christmas... and since the music in this one is also composed by Danny Elfman, let's talk about Scrooged.
Scrooged, yes, with the famous Bill Murray.
Yes, and directed by Richard Donner.
Richard Donner, nice.
Yeah, Richard Donner gets a lot of love in a lot of films having to do with Christmas, surprisingly.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, yeah, Bill Murray is in it. And then we get... oh, what is her name? Karen Allen from
Indiana Jones
fame. Yeah, from number one and number four, if I recall.
Yeah.
Carol Kane was in it. And Bobcat Goldthwait.
Oh, so, Bobcat.
Yeah. So a great cast. It's just an amazing cast and a really cool concept. It's basically just a modern take on Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol.
Mm-hmm.
And... it works so well in so many ways. I think honestly, it could eventually take over A Christmas Carol.
I can see that.
You know what I'm saying? Like, 100 years from now, people might be like, oh, I don't know what came before it, but there's movie Scrooged. I think there's like a book based on it or something called A Christmas Carol, but Scrooge is amazing, you know? I yeah. can totally see that.
Yeah.
But what are your favorite like moments in this movie?
Oh man, the way they portrayed death, the animatronics that they used for him, and just like a different way to portray him, like that monitor for a face.
Mm-hmm.
And then just the way they modernized his death, like the way they showed it. It wasn't like, I don't want to give too much away, but when the Grim Reaper is reaching through the monitors behind his back, that's
oh my god, yes, that spine tingling, like blood curdling, creepy.
And the makeup that they used for his partner when he warns him about the three ghosts.
Uh huh.
And how they that little
yeah the mouse.
Yeah, exactly.
That like comes out of the back of his head, knocks out an eyeball or something, if I recall.
Ball.
Oh, it's so gross.
Because that's how he had died. No, he either had a heart attack on the green, or he got hit by a golf ball while he was playing golf.
Yeah, probably the whole vengeance thing of life would be the most mundane thing. So that's what gets you. You could be as rich and arrogant and powerful as you want to be, but death is the great equalizer. And I think that's what they wanted to display in this, in the original story and in this story as well.
Mm-hmm.
Charles Dickens was, he was something else with his writing. He was very vengeful, so to speak. He wrote about karma, definitely. He did not appreciate people that took advantage, it seems. Although I don't know much, you know, that much about his personal life to say. But I personally liked The Ghost of Christmas Present by Carol Kane played that role.
Oh, yes. She's so brilliant.
The scene with the toaster.
Uh-huh.
Where she's like, she's so abusive to Bill Murray's character, to Frank, that it's hilarious. It's like slapstick borderline. It is so funny. How she just slaps him around and punches him and pushes him and hits him with toasters and things. And I just had a really good time with her character. I thought it was a lot of fun. And Bill Murray's perfect for the role of an arrogant guy that turns into a warm, loving person. He really, you can see the turn, and it's very well done.
Oh, they really stick it to you in the feelings with that film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're right in the feels, yeah?
Yeah, like,
what if waterfalls, Frankie Angel?
Yeah, that was David Johansson that played the Ghost of Christmas Past.
No,
he's Niagara Falls, Frankie Angel.
There you go, Niagara Falls.
Yeah, there you go. Yes, that's it. Yeah, he was perfect for that role. A great film, great cast. Anything else you want to mention?
About that one? No. Like, I really want people to watch this one for the holidays.
All right, so we'll do two more quickly, and then we'll call it on this one. So let's throw out a couple more here that we can talk about briefly.
Another one of my favorites, going back to Tim Burton, would be Batman Returns and Edward Scissorhands.
Ah, Edward Scissorhands. See, for me, Edward Scissorhands it's one of my least favorite Tim Burton films, to be honest, and I catch a lot of grief for it. Mm-hmm. I think it's beautiful to look at. I think the costumes are excellent, but I just think that he could not stop revisiting the Frankenstein story.
Right.
Like, he did Frankenweenie twice, once in live action and one in stop motion, and he did Edward Scissorhands, and they're all the same basic plot.
Yeah.
And for me, that's... Reimaginings are great, but you can only go to the well so many times. And he did Frankenweenie first, actually. He did Frankenweenie in 1984,
mm-hmm.
The live-action version. And that had Daniel Stern in it and played the father.
And the little kid from The Neverending Story.
Exactly. Yep. That took me a bit to realize who he was. And then I remembered, that's a kid that yells at Treyu. And then I was like, wait, that's it. That's Never Ending Story.
And it's what's his name? Marv from Home Alone.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, so Shelley so Duvall. After,
yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I was surprised to see that, too, because from what I remember, she was harassed like relentlessly on the set of The Shining.
Yeah.
And it kind of drove her a little batty.
It did.
So, you know, this is like 6 or 7 years after that, if I recall, that she filmed this. And she did an excellent job in this, in the Frankenweenie. And it's a great little film. It's about 30 minutes long, for those who haven't seen it, the live-action version. It's fantastic. But you liked Edward Scissorhands. What did you like Edward Scissorhands for? What's like the thing that draws you in the most?
I really like the music, and Vincent Price is always a treat to listen to and see. His voice is so iconic, and I've always been a fan of Johnny Depp, and I had a huge crush on Winona Ryder, like ever since I had seen her in Beetlejuice. And for the longest time, I had no idea that Anthony Michael Hall was the big bully in that film.
Anthony Michael Hall was the big bully. Well, it's been a long time since I've seen that. Yeah, I don't realize that at all. I didn't remember that.
Yeah, and the sculptures that Edward would make with the ice and the what are they, hedges?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And yeah, those are phenomenal. Fantastic vision with that, for sure. Again, for me, excellent, top notch set direction. You know, and top-notch makeup, top-notch costuming. Everything there was great. All the elements were great. Music was fantastic. Just the story to me, it's been done too much. So I was like not into it as much as a lot of people. And I don't blame people for being into it. I really don't. I like Sleepy Hollow a lot more than a lot of people do for those exact reasons. It's been done before, but the costuming and the set pieces and stuff were so fantastic. And the setting, the background that he created was just so rich and thick. It was a full meal for the eyes before you even got to the story. And the story was different. It wasn't the original Headless Horseman. It was a little more, they went a little further into it, which is what I appreciated. So that's why I liked that film more than Edward Scissorhands.
Yeah. And I liked that Ray Park was the Headless Rider.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool. So you have Darth Maul.
Yeah.
Riding around on a horse without a head, which is fantastic. So you have one more.
Let's talk about Christmas Vacation, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Yeah. Jeez, we can't end this without talking about National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Yeah.
It was Chevy Chase was the incomparable Clark Griswold. What? And we had who's the brother? He was the older one. Randy Quaid, right?
Oh, Randy Quaid.
Yeah. Yeah, he was great. This one came out in what, 88, 89, I think it came out with?
Uh-huh. And it had William Hickey as well.
Yep. Johnny Galecki was in there, too. Juliette Lewis, Beverly D'Angelo, of course, played his wife, Ellen Griswold. And it again, surprise, surprise, screenplay by John Hughes.
Yeah.
So usually if it was in the 80s or 90s, early 90s, and it was a really fun comedy, it was written by John Hughes. Like the guy made my childhood, to be honest.
Same.
Like it was just hilarious, a lot of the films that he wrote and was able to get produced. The basic story of this one, Clark Griswold, he wants to have a perfect family Christmas, so he pesters his wife and his children. He tries to make sure everything is in line, including the tree and the house decorations and everything, when his hick cousin Eddie, played by Randy Quaid, and his family show up unplanned and start living in their camper on their property. And even worse, Clark's employers renege on a holiday bonus that's much needed for a family pool, leading to extreme hijinks. this whole story is about extreme hijinks, I think. It's just really fun. This is probably the most popular out of all the National Lampoon movies, Christmas Vacation.
I would say so, yeah.
I mean, there's a reason to watch it every single year, and that's because it's a holiday film, and it's really steeped heavily in the holidays. I mean, most of the time, Clark's wearing a Christmas hat. It's, you just can't get any more holiday than that.
Yeah.
But the thing that that is surprising, I thought that Russell Griswold, I think they changed Russell's character at least two or three times throughout the National Lampoon films.
Yeah.
Almost everyone had a different Russell. Yeah. Wasn't it also played by... the guy you were just talking about, the villain from...
Anthony Michael Hall?
Yeah, wasn't Anthony Michael Hall like one of the kids at one point?
I think so.
I'm not 100%, but he might have been one of the kids in one of the other National Lampoon movies. I think Ethan Embry even was at one point. So there's a lot of these kids that we've seen in a lot of other movies that played and ran through this National Lampoon series. Mm-hmm. But I think, like, there's a lot of other good films out there. And I know that you and I had talked about some other films that we thought were just great. So I'm just going to run down a line real quick with you. Jim Carrey's The Grinch That Stole Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fantastic live action retelling of the animated Grinch. Bad Santa. If ever there was a twisted holiday film, Billy Bob Thornton being involved with this made it just fantastic. He is such a piece of shit in this film. You have to love him.
Yeah.
Christmas Story, classic there. Home Alone 1 and 2, of course, are great Christmas classics. You got to watch them every year. The Santa Claus was another one with Tim Allen.
Yeah.
Very clever type of story. The Santa Claus. The Claus is a card that if, you know, you pick it up and Santa's been killed, you have to take over the mantle of Santa Claus. So that was very funny. They used legal terms to make the story. Yeah. The Jim Carrey Christmas Carol was also kind of interesting and pretty fun, to be honest.
Yeah.
And if you're looking for Hanukkah, there's Eight Crazy Nights with Adam Sandler, an animated movie that people might find entertaining. But that's music. Go ahead.
Some catchy music in there as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Adam Sandler. Of course, it's going to be catchy. But yeah, I think that's going to just do us here for this evening here, this afternoon, or whatever time you're listening to it. Morning, I guess. It's going to do us for this morning, Pete. So thank you so much for coming out and being a guest on this. And short films that are coming out is The Lies Behind the Eyes. Is that what it's called?
Lies Behind Their Eyes.
Lies Behind Their Eyes. So please do check that out. I will be doing that, and I hope you all do too. Please find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Yeah, we're on there. We're on Spotify. We are also on iHeartRadio. And as well on Apple Podcasts, we're on Spreaker, Stitcher, TuneIn, and just a whole host of others. Odds are, if you throw a dart at a podcast provider, we are on that network. So please feel free to seek us out. If you have any questions, comments, anything like that, feel free to reach out to us on Instagram or Facebook. You could even email us if you want. Again, thank you, Pete, for being a guest on the show. We really appreciate it very much. So thanks for coming out.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. And if Pete and I get together and we don't see you anytime soon, hopefully we will see you someday at the comic shop. Thanks for listening.
Take care, guys.
This has been The Real Short Box. We'll see you at the comic shop. Thanks for listening.